Blog Talk Radio.
Please hang up and try again.
Kayak Fishing Radio, Thursday, the early show. I'm Chip Gibson, Tree Hugger. And I don't know what we're going to talk about tonight. I don't think there's been anything going on in the last week.
Yeah, whatever,
right? We slayed some fish. That's what we're going to talk about. We slayed some fish, and by God, we got the number two fisherman on our team in the Southeast region. Right, Dee?
Oh, I'm on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're on.
Oh, hi. Am I number two, really?
Yes, you are number two. What happened?
Oh, my God.
They were carrying over points from last year. So... it looks like they went in there because one of the guys is going to be on Rob's show later tonight, and it looks like maybe they went in and took out all of last year's points, and you are sitting at number two in the Southeast region right now.
Applause from the
Woo-hoo!
West Coast. Yay!
That's right.
Okay.
You're awesome, Dee. I ordered my T-shirt today. I put my fish on it, right?
Yeah.
Picture of me, like the big fat Cuban holding the fish. And it's like.
You mean Ron Jeremy?
Yeah.
Ron Jeremy.
Yeah, there. He's like, the shirt says, "I learned to fish like a girl from D. Kaminsky, realkayakfishing.com.
Nice.
Oh, yay.
Nice.
So. Let me welcome all of our folks here on the show tonight. We got Rob, the bad backcast there. And hey, Rob. We got Mark Landy Crew from Virginia Beach. Hey, Mark.
Hey.
Or as he's well known now in different regions, Crispy Critter.
Big Red.
Big Red.
Yeah, Redford Chuck is jealous because he only wishes he'd get the same tone of color as I had on Sunday.
I could get that same tone if I was standing next to a red neon light.
We got the Spiker from California. How are you, Spiker?
Hey, all.
All right.
Chili.
We thought Spike may have gone on a kayak paddle around the world. We hadn't heard from him in so long, but he has shown back up.
I'm back in front of my little netbook working and glad to be on board. I am living through you guys. Somebody had better tell me a fishing story pretty quick.
All right. And it looks like the redfish Chuck has just joined. Is that you, Chuck?
Yep.
All right, buddy. So Spike has joined us tonight. He wants us to tell fish stories. I don't think we've got anything to tell him.
Come on. I've been hearing rumors.
Chuck, did you put some more points on the board yourself today, didn't you?
No, I just finally submitted my fish from the other day.
Oh, okay. Well, first off, a big thank you to Dee and Chuck for putting us on some serious fishing. Actually, it was so much that it can't be called fishing. It could only be called catching for that day. I mean, you could throw literally, I mean, I still have the half of a worm that I found on the tongue of my trailer as we were building our kayaks up, getting ready to jump in the water. I'm following Dee off into the mist of the goon, seeing her out there, taking pictures of her and the clone as they're paddling around. She's looking. She says, "Here you go. We spy the wakes coming off of the island. We start paddling to intercept them. She picks up the direction. We go. We take a good cutoff course. I mean, I'm feeling my Top Gun training, getting a good intercept course. Long cast out there, but I'm still drifting up into the fish. Well, actually, I didn't have anything on the hook. I put that little piece of rubber worm that I found on the trailer of my on the tongue of my trailer and threw that out there, and that's what caught that big fish.
Yeah,
but freaking crazy day. I mean,
yeah, so but you know, you're not taking enough credit because you cast it exactly in their path. And it landed just so, and you waited, and the second then they crossed over, like you were told,
just like a girl,
twitch, boom, dang.
It was real
music.
Oh,
my God, that was so great. And,
unlike me,
went for a sleigh ride.
When I came paddling up, I bobbed them right on the flipping head.
Yeah, well,
cat.
That happened. Practice, practice, practice. He got it
How
right.
How many people do you have
you
on
know?
The water?
Seven
what?
Of us.
Oh,
there were seven
that,
of us
Dave.
Out there.
Not,
and
not
what was
on that
the air temperature?
That was frosting, though.
What'd you say?
What
Spike?
Was the air temperature?
Air?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't
you
know.
All
it was all fog.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
Air
You're living
gone.
In paradise,
I mean,
you guys.
Yeah, I mean, we were just...
Water,
go ahead.
Water was, what did we take, 63? What was it?
Yeah, that's what you said.
62, something like that? So
yeah.
Air was probably a lot colder because there was just nothing but fog.
And, I mean,
Hello.
It was like, I was
Hello.
Wearing a lightweight long sleeve shirt, and that was it. I mean, the cologne was a little chilly, but Crispy Critter there wasn't wearing but a short sleeve shirt and some shorts and a pair of Crocs, too. How are them red dots working out for you, Mark? Can you get your shoes on, man? Mark?
Is he still there?
I don't. He's the phone is still there. He must have run
yeah,
off to get
you know,
a beer or something.
Yeah, you know, I turned my phone off and mute, so you guys would hear my kids screaming.
Oh, okay.
no, I've got rid of the dots on my feet and the first couple of layers of skin off my face. So yeah, I'm covering.
It's like a face clip.
That was good, man. Now the day before. Spike, we were up at Little Talbot Island, just northeast of like Amelia Island area, northeast of Jacksonville.
Yeah, I know it.
Some great guys. Excuse me.
That's quite a waste from Mosquito Lagoon, isn't it?
Not if you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and drive like hell to get there. So,
what
but,
happened up there?
Well, that's where we had our campsite. So we had the guys from. Jack, some guys from Irish Water Dogs, Jack's Kayak Fishing, showed
cool.
up. Charlie and Scott, Mountain Dew Man, and Charlie Polchek, I guess his name is. And let's see, eventually I guess Dredd showed up and some other folks. But, I mean, so we're in the salt marshes up there going after some trout. We had probably, how many folks we have on the water that day? Probably.
I think 13 or 14.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was like plastic Navy assault.
Sea trout were chewing good?
I caught four.
Nice.
I don't know. Go ahead.
That's a decent day, you know.
Yeah, but it was the day after the full moon. So we're thinking negative tides. We went out just at the end of the high tide. We paddle out. What do you think, Rob? We paddle about 4 miles?
Yeah, one way we went. We got out, yeah, about 4 miles, I would say.
Yeah, we're headed out towards Simpsons, I guess, was the name of the area we were headed towards. And fishing the little bends, you know, as the water's falling and stuff. So we get out there. and you could probably see 8 to 10 inches of the grass above the water.
Wow.
By the time we turn around now, and I mean, this is a negative tide that we're coming back, like a 1.5 negative, we're 6 feet below the tops of the grass. And
looking,
I mean,
for mud?
Yeah, we're paddling in mud, man.
Oof.
And we come back, the clone, my 12-year-old, he's having a meltdown trying to fight against the current and stuff.
And, that was a tough current, Chip, man.
Oh, it was terrible,
man.
There
was a couple of 100-yard stretches there where you had to paddle as hard and fast as you can just to inch along that 100-yard stretch of heavy current, man. It was probably one of the roughest paddles I've ever experienced.
But so the 12-year-old's keeping up. We've got, you know, day paddlers coming off of Amelia Kayak, their rental kayaks, you know. They
Come
turn
on,
the
let's
corner.
Go kayak fishing.
You know, they're out there. They're just paddling around, you know, joy paddling. And they can't fight the current. They're just getting out and standing on the sandbar. And they're going to be there for a few hours because it didn't turn around until about
8 o'clock
that night.
I've heard these stories forever.
Yeah. So the 12-year-old, he's melting down because he can't keep up. We're not worried about him keeping up. We're just worried about him staying back there somewhere.
Right.
But then we turn the last corner. We're like, hey, we can see the pier, you know, the boat ramp. But it's 150 yards of nothing but mud. We had to carry the kayaks for the last 150 yards.
Dragging through up to your knees.
Oh, it was.
I wish I could say I had never had been in that situation, but that ain't the case.
You know, being an old sick Marine, it was kind of like it hurt so good. It was really fun.
Yeah, we came around that last bend, and I was asking Chip, I'm like, you know, because all weekend it's all these Marine Corps stories, you know, because, like, everybody but me was in the service at some point. And it's like one of those sick Marine Corps things, you know, where you can see the dock, you're okay, yay, we're almost home, and you come around that last bend and the last 150 yards is like bone
the
dry.
The worst part of
you
the
know?
Trip. Unbelievable.
Oh, man.
These guys, there's nothing that they're going to get into that's any worse than what they've been in already, and they're a lot closer to it. You know, you were talking about the moon, and I'm always struggling. I've always had this theory, while exaggerated, that there's a 10-minute period in the day when the fish just turn on. And even in the worst day of fishing, and if I'm lucky enough to be on the water at that time, I'm going to catch fish. But I'm trying, you know, I meet fishermen all over the world, and some of these people have such ingrained senses of getting on fish, and I just know that I have so much to learn. So I read this thing published online a week or two ago, and it was a guy in Florida. He's a fishing guide. I don't know. I don't remember what his name was, but he did this log, and it showed that he factored in the high tide, the low tide, the sunrise, the sunset, but then he started factoring in the moonrise and the moonset, and it was a huge, huge element on when he caught fish. That hour and a half before, and, you know, and I'm looking at the moon go down at 11 in the morning some days. Did you guys figure the moon into your fishing much?
It was, go ahead.
There's a little bit of a difference in what you're talking about in terms of location, though, because I've never really loved fishing the day that it's a full moon. I don't fish 2 days before and 2 days after, but we got really lucky when we went to the lagoon because we had such a great thickness of fog, and this is just my opinion. When we caught those 150, 200, I think Chuck came up with the right number. It was actually 200-plus fish.
Reds? All reds?
They were all reds. But the
Yikes.
Fog was so thick that night that those fish probably could not have even seen the moon to know that it was time to eat or whatnot.
Or just have the sense to go off. No, I buy all of this.
So with that thickness of fog, in my opinion, I think that's why they were still hungry and we did so well. And I never, previous to that, ever fished and was successful with the full moon, ever. And I've been fishing forever. So
yeah, that's a pretty clear difference. My experience has been the same, that full moon fishing stinks. I don't care if I'm on a lake, you know, on the East Coast or on the Pacific, full moon fishing. Again, every once in a while, there's just this incredible... And it doesn't matter what species, whether I'm fishing, you know, bass or halibut. There, every once in a while, and it's years apart, there's an extreme exception. Same with the extreme low tides don't seem to be very fishy.
I think it stresses the fish a lot. You know, they've been, you know, everyone says, you know, I don't fish a full moon. I don't fish a full moon. Why? Because the fish are feeding all night long.
Yeah.
So what I do is I use that logic and I go, hey, I'm going to fish all night long.
I'm going to start figuring in that moonrise and moonset on any given day and start logging this, and I will certainly report back.
I use the astro table that's on, I think it's ESPN. That's a great one. Or any of the major astro tables when it comes with, you know, moonrise, moonset, directly above or below you.
Right.
I use that more on my freshwater fishing for my bass. That will really turn them on for whatever reason. I don't get it as much with the saltwater because there are just way too many other factors. Excuse me, that roll into those fish, tides, you know, water temp, you know, if they have to poop real bad, you know, that's all that goes into. But bass definitely have a major pull and movement with the moon.
I think one of the great advantages that all the kayak anglers have, and that's really what stuck out to me since early on, is most, you know, when I fished pre-kayak, I mean, if I fished 20, 25 days a year, that was a big thing. But I think most people who consider themselves anglers, if they get 5, 10 days a year on the water, the kayaks, you know, give us a lot more sessions. And I've always preached and tried to follow it as much as I can, that if I get the opportunity, get that little window of opportunity to go fishing, just to do it. And it's amazing how that's bucked the trends because, you know, after the fact, I'll look at the, you know, slack tide and building moon, and it was all the things that would have felt negative to me if I hadn't just taken the opportunity to go. So I'm just trying to con you into going to fish more.
I'd like to add a little bit more about the tide situation. And it's really not part of the moon part, but I fish mostly around the Sebastian Inlet area until just recently. We've just not had any fish down there, so I've been up in the Mosquito Lagoon. But Chuck will tell you a little bit more about that in a second regarding tide. But tide in the Sebastian Inlet area is nowhere near the amount of foot depth increase or decrease as it is on the Gulf side. We have about a 6-inch, if we're lucky, to a foot increase or decrease. And it is tide specific when you're only like a mile in that area on the flats from whether it's north or south of the inlet. And it is the fish are affected by the tide in terms of, you know, bait coming in and out because of that. In the Mosquito Lagoon area, you don't have a tide. There's no inlet or water influx or anything to make that bait come in and out. It's just what it is, you know. So Mosquito Lagoon fishing can be an all-day thing where, like today, I fished from 10 o'clock this morning till 3 in the afternoon. No, it was actually 4 in the afternoon. And I had, I swear to God, it was only a half an hour worth of fishing coming, a fish being caught, because the tide had changed and I just got lucky. So there is a difference, but it had nothing to do with the moon or anything like that. But if, because when I'm fishing with a moon, a full moon, and a tide increase, decrease, I still don't get anything. So I know the moon has a lot to do with it.
And let me jump in here, guys. 904, is that Charlie?
Yeah, that's me. What's up, guys?
Hey, we got Charlie on.
Hey, Charlie.
Charlie on the chain
hey,
with us.
How y'all doing?
We're doing great, man.
Doing good, buddy.
Let me also say hey to a few folks that are in the chat room here tonight. If you guys got questions, there's a couple of folks who are not in the chat room that are on the line. Just make sure that just put a couple of things in cap so I'll pick it up, or Rob the Bad Bat Cast will pick it up. But we got David Minnick, our general smart guy from Georgia Kayak Fishing, in there with us. We got Jag Yacker, another Jacksonville folk. Miss Bagcast, little Lala down there from the Tampa area, and Sunjammers, which is Brad, and I believe Brad is from Sunjammers. It's a tackle shop there in Panama City, I believe. It's in the Panhandle of Florida. Welcome aboard on the line.
Yeah, America Mile.
Yeah. So, thank you everybody for joining us in. We're talking right now. We had a great weekend this past weekend. Started off fishing with Charlie and the crew there in Jacksonville around Little Talbot Island, and then went down and fished the Mosquito Lagoon with D. Kaminsky and Chuck Levi, the Redfish Chuck there, and we just had a great time. So you guys go back to it. We're talking about tide right now. Go ahead, Charlie.
I'm gonna jump in real quick about the Mosquito Lagoon, and D just might not know because she hasn't spent a lot of time up there. There's a serious tide flow in the Mosquito Lagoon the further north you go. Where we were fishing, there you see like a very, very slight movement of water. It's not enough to even call it truly a tide. But there, you know, the thing about it is with the full moon, the tides, and that whole, I don't buy into a lot of that in certain bodies of water. Some of my best red fishing days have been on days where we've had a full moon at night. The difference is I don't have an early morning bite. I get an afternoon bite or a late evening bite right before dark or something, where those fish really turn on and start getting kind of crazy, waiting for the sun, you know, waiting for the sun to go down or whatever. But you know, I don't know. I think that the planets were all in alignment the day when we were out there. I don't know, man. That was crazy. It was awesome. You know, it's cool to see that many fish in one spot. I don't know what would have caused those fish to stay where they stayed for as long as they stayed there. Me and Dee were talking about that. It's just kind of weird because normally once you get into a school of redfish, they'll hang around for a little while. You can usually bounce them back and forth off a couple kayaks or whatever to kind of keep them in a corralled area. But, I mean, we were scattered all over the place there at one point. You guys were catching fish at one end of the hole, and we were catching fish at the other end of the hole, and Aaron's paddling around all of us and catching fish everywhere, and it was just kind of crazy. So the tide issue in the lagoon, you know, I want to start exploring more north up around Oak Hill. Maybe Dee will join me on some of those trips. The tide is nasty up there. It's much like it is up in Jacksonville. Now, I know buddies of mine that have gone up to Oak Hill area and have tried to go shrimping before at night and got too far back up into a cut and ended up staying the night there until the tide came back in. So, yeah, there's definitely a tide movement there because you're really not that far removed from Ponce if you go a little bit further north than where we were at. But as far as the moon thing goes, I don't know, man. It's like barometric pressure. I don't pay any attention to that. I fish when I can fish, and I catch fish when I go. So, I don't know. It is what it is. You know, I think a lot of times guys just look too much into it. You know, I mean, my buddy bought a $400 watch. It's got barometric pressure and moon phases and dates and craziness on it. And I laugh at him because I'll call him, hey, man, you want to go fishing with me? And he'll say, nah, it's not the right day. The moon's not right, or the barometric pressure is too low. And I'm like, okay, buddy, whatever you say.
That's like using a sonar unit as a fish finder.
right.
Good stuff, you guys.
Oh, it was awesome. And, you know, Chuck, you made a comment the other day. I think you were talking to the clone there. about like 90% efficient is just being where the fish are at. And
yeah, 90% efficient is fishing where the fish are. Oh, by the way, I have to say the clone is one heck of a fisherman. I mean, the kid,
nice deer.
I'm really proud of the kid, man. He hangs in there, and when he had his meltdown the day before, you know, we were talking around a campfire, and he just melted down. He was beat, and he's like, "I'm just a 12-year-old kid. You guys are adults. I can't keep up with you." And we had made it all the we had paddled all the way against the current coming in, and so we were cutting up with him at the fire, and he was just taking it like a trooper, man. He's like, "I know I'm going to catch a lot of heck for this, right?" And I go, "Yeah." But he was like, he hung in there, and the next morning he was right up, jumped in the car. He didn't go to sleep until we got back to the camp. I mean, he wasn't sleeping in the car on the way down. He wasn't sleeping on the way back up. So he hung
cool
in there.
Cool morning for all those fish.
I'll tell you what, he showed all of us by catching the first two fish of the day. So
three casts.
Oh, yeah.
Three casts.
And wasn't he was the only one that caught trout.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he caught... I think he got two trout that day.
Yep.
Yeah, that
yep.
one that was just short of the 20-inch mark there.
Yeah, that big
that
fat.
Was yep. nice, that was a nice fish, man.
Yeah. So Chuck and Dee, you guys have to do your young angler's guide camp for the summer. He wants to come down.
Yeah.
Here. He says.
Yeah, we were talking about it. We're going to call it. What did he call it? Call it Camp Redfish or something like that.
There you go,
it.
Camp Redfish, man. I'm telling you, man.
That was awesome. It was awesome. Honest to God, I mean, I had such a great time fishing with you guys. I think I enjoyed it even more because the clone was with y'all. It was fun talking to him and watching him, you know, get all excited every time he hooked a fish and. Listening to him being kind of bummed out when he wasn't catching fish and then, you know, move him over by me and say, "Hey, cast right there." And he'd throw a perfect cast and boom, hook right up. It was just a lot of fun, man. It was really, really cool.
Yeah. You're going to love it when your boys get to that point, man. Cause it's just a blast. It really is. I'm a real proud pop. So, but yeah, he was even saying on the way back home, he goes, I like to fish like a girl, too. I want to fish like Dee." So we got all the posters or all the banners hung up in the side of the garage there where we keep all the fishing gear and stuff. So he was very stoked. He got the little tackle bag you gave him, and that's his new lunch box. He takes that to school with him now.
Well, very cool, man. Very cool. Tell him that since he is my new official adopted nephew, I'll send him some more stuff as I get it from my manufacturer.
All right, so he'll be on Uncle Chuck's on Uncle Chunk's list.
There you go.
Okay, so in the let's see, I'm checking up on what's going on in the chat room here. So Slayer Jigheads. Talking about it. Charlie's going fishing at 9:30. Let's see what else we got here. 35-inch reds. Who's catching 35-inch reds there, Charlie? North Carolina getting slammed. Is that what's right, Mark? You talking about North Carolina getting big reds right now, some bulls? He's on mute. And Miss Badcast, she wants a camo yak now.
Hey, Dee, how did you do
it?
You
got to understand, Laramie loves anything camo. You know, and I'm not talking pink camo either. I'm talking real, honest-to-goodness camo. I was telling her, "Oh, yeah, Dee has a camo yak and a camo fishing pole and a camo paddle." And she's like, "No way, really? They make that stuff?" I was like, "Yeah." So we'll get her decked out in camo. You won't be able to see her anymore.
You know, I'm the one thing that I regret about the weekend was that before you pulled your yak out of the water, Dee, I should have paddled that thing around because that's
yeah.
pretty. I want to give Native a try. So I guess I'll have to come back down and fish with you again.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So, but I'm fishing in that Trident, and it's still, with my big head when I stand up, it's just too much off balance there. So, plus I kind of like the way that seat looks in there, keeping your butt up off the wet floor.
Well, the next part of my fleet will be the paddleboard by Native, which is called the VersaBoard. And you could put a cooler underneath your butt and a little padded seat there, like the Yeti cooler is going to be awesome on there. Or you can just go ahead and slide in a 360 seat that the kayak that I had. You can go ahead and slide that sucker in and do a 360 on there if you want and fish. It's going to be awesome. You're going to love that one, too.
Go ahead.
Steve.
Yes.
Are you with Yeti yet?
No.
Okay. Well, if you want, I can recommend you to those guys because I'm part of their pro staff.
Right.
So I mean, if you're planning on buying a Yeti cooler to put on your VersaBoard, I don't know if you've seen how expensive Yeti coolers are, but it's definitely nice to be on the pro staff for them. They could carry
it. Yeah. I mean, that would be the best cooler to put on there. Trust me. Yeah.
I just got a new kayak.
Yeah, I heard. Tell us about it.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. It's a throwback. It's Emotion used to make a kayak. I believe they called it the Fisherman. And it was a more of a flat kind of a platform. It's shaped, I don't know, it's not shaped like anything I've seen before. So it was a really cool boat, and apparently it was pretty popular at one time. And when they introduced the Grand Slam, they kind of went away with it. And Shakespeare got a hold of Emotion, and don't hold me to this, but I'm pretty sure this is how the story went. Shakespeare got a hold of Emotion, said, "Hey, listen, we want to put out kayaks, but we don't want to, you know, build them. Can you private label them for us?" So they private labeled a few, and the result is the Fisherman with Shakespeare written on the side, which I will cover up with a nice decal if this Chuck's Kayak Adventures. But anyway, it's a great boat as far as stability. Paddles like a dream. Does everything that I needed to do for my style of fishing. You guys saw how me and Dee fish. We have a similar fishing style. But 14 foot, weighs, I think, 62 pounds. Nice stable platform. There's nothing in the way, so it'll be a great boat to stand up and fly fish out of. And I'm excited.
Yay! Did you rig that up already, or is it something that you gotta do what you want to do?
No, it came with. Unfortunately, it's a fisherman style, so it came with two flush mount rod holders, which I'm not a fan of. But I'll make do with what I got. I'll make do with those because I think I'm pretty sure Scotty makes an adapter that goes into those flush mounts that you can put a normal Scotty rod holder on. And if not, it's not a big deal. It's got a rod holder up between your legs up in the front, much like my Emotion does, my Grand Slam. And, it's a cool boat. And thank God I got it when I did because I just booked a trip for Tuesday, so... I'm going to need the extra boat, so I'm excited about it on a personal level for fishing purposes, but I think my clients will enjoy it, too.
You know what's funny? I'm looking at the Shakespeare website, and half of their pictures of the angler, I guess it's called, have a Emotion kayak on the side. I just think that's funny.
Yeah, well, I mean, they didn't take off all of their logos. They left their logos on it so that you'd still know that it is an Emotion product, just private labeled. Like, you can buy the Grand Slam, which is on their website. It's private labeled for Shakespeare, but I'm pretty sure the retail cost is exactly the same. So, you know, I apologize. I should have given everybody an opportunity to paddle my boat around, too, if anybody wanted to. That Grand Slam's a pretty good boat, but going back over to the Native, I know you guys were just talking about it, that seat that's in the Native, if Emotion could figure out a way to put a seat in it, in their boats like that seat, I'd never buy another vessel ever again. That seat is absolutely incredible.
Dude, Chuck, you were like, I've seen people stand in boats. And I have to tell a quick fish story. Dee is like, not only is she a great fisherman, fisherwoman, fisherperson, but she has balance like a damn spider. Because she's trying to get a picture of that fish and me, and she's standing on the bow of my Trident while she's doing it. She didn't stay in her own dang boat. She jumped down the bow of mine. And it was just like a little spider running around out there trying to take a picture of it. But then I look over one time, and Chuck, you're standing sideways in your boat, man. And I can't get my feet wide enough. You're like a daggum skateboarder or something, like Tony Hawk on a kayak, man.
Except a lot more hefty, you know. That belly I got, man, it keeps my center of gravity right above my big old feet. So it, you know, kind of stays keeping right there.
Hey, who has the Trident that's getting wobbly for standing up on?
I got a pretty good deal on a Trident 13. It's an older, past year model, but I took it out this week with us down there. I usually fish out of a Cobra fishing dive, but I took the down there. It's a Trident 13. It was a non-angler one, so it didn't have the rod pod or anything, but. It was actually, I don't usually stand up in my Cobra because it's got the ankle bumpers in there, you know, the molded in foot pad.
Right.
And
you know,
so,
the reason I brought it up is I've got these sponsons sitting out on the front deck, and I have these are from Spring Creek, which is canoegear.com, and I think they're in Minneapolis, they're Minnesota. I'm pretty sure it's Minnesota. And they make all this aftermarket canoe and kayak stuff. But they have a sail kit, which I'm planning on putting on one of my tandems.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes with this little sponson set. And I know in the skinny water, man, I mean, you know, early on in my career, people said, oh, I want to stand up on my kayak. But, you know, they were from Malibu. And there's never, ever a reason to stand up on a kayak anywhere, you know, on this side of the country. There's virtually no sight fishing. And there, it's really important, the advantage, you know, to be able to get up on a kayak and stand up. I think that's why we saw a lot of boats made that had all these, that were contraptions, you know, three-hulled V-wings. And did you ever see any of those boats?
It was the Fish Eagle, yeah.
I don't know what they were called, but there was all kinds of, early on with kayak fishing, all these kayaks specifically for standing up. But I think just a short set of sponsons. These things are really classy. They're little, you know, they're a little bigger than like lifeguard cans, and they have a really rigid aluminum framework. But I think on any model of kayak, you know, you want to stand up and get a little visual perception on that, even for pulling your kayak around in the skinniest water. I think those things are, I don't know if anybody uses them in Florida and in the Southeast, but I think they're a pretty good idea.
You give it a try.
Cheaper than a new boat.
Yeah. Let me give a quick shout out to my friends down there, Sunjammers. Sunjammers.com, or you can find them on Facebook.com, Sunjammers. That's Brad down there at Panama City Beach. They had fiddler crabs the other day, too, when we couldn't find them up in Jacksonville, so we should have run over there. I think we need to do a road trip to Panama City. Fish with Brad and Ernie and Linda. So,
you know what's funny, Chip?
What's that?
Is that I was looking at Sunjammer's team there on Kayak Wars, and everybody on their team drives a Hobie.
Oh yeah, well, it's like.
And I asked him on Twitter. I shot him a quick message over there when I saw that last week, and I was like, hey, do you have to have a Hobie to be on your team? And he was just saying no. It was just one of those, just a coincidence or whatever. But it's funny because they're like a pretty much a Hobie shop over there, you know.
Well, you know, as we were talking around the campfire, and you know, about there's really, you know, no perfect boat because I mean, for the skinny water and stuff. A nice stable boat. I mean, that native looks pretty sexy for skinny water. The way that you can, I mean, you know, I'm thinking, you know, you don't have your feet stretched out in front of you. It's got a comfortable seat in it. It looks relatively stable with those big pontoon, that kind of tunnel hull that it's got. But when you go over there to the beach, right? I mean, you launch in your Hobie, and you got plenty of room for those wings under there. As soon as you're 6 feet off of the beach, and you know now you can go, you can take yourself on out a mile or so off the beach, and get into some reef fish, you know. So it,
yeah.
it just kind of depends upon where you're at. I know when we were fishing there in Sarasota with shallow pockets. Hell, man, that was a heck of a paddle, man, against that current and stuff, you know, and that big barge of my Cobra fishing dive, you know. So, and Charlie said he don't need any, he doesn't need the pontoons. He's got his native. So, but
I guess it really just kind of depends on what kind of. I was saying, I guess it kind of depends on what kind of fishing you do. Because I mean. I don't know, man, and I'm not being biased because I'm on the pro team or whatever, but I'm a pretty big fan of my Grand Slam, honestly, because I can see myself wanting to take that boat, drop it in a big center console, run it out to the other side of the Gulf Stream and catch big pelagics out of it. And, as you saw, it's stable enough for me to be able to stand up and fish the skinny water in it. So, you know, it. I think there is a perfect boat. It just depends on what style of fishing you're going to do the most, and there's a boat out there for everybody. And I think what happens is too many times guys buy boats because it's a good deal or just on a whim, oh, that looks cool, I'm going to buy that, you know, instead of taking it out and actually trying it out, you know. And for, you know, to each his own, but I think, you know, for me anyway, I think I finally found what I would consider my perfect boat, which would be that Grand Slam for what I do. You know, I do paddle a long way. So, you know, a 7 mile round trip's not unheard of for me. That's pretty average. So, you know, it's just, I don't know. I guess it
well,
is kind of like, you know.
One thing I noticed over the weekend, you know, we were kind of talking about that, and I was like looking at other boats and stuff. Is that my Malibu is a dog, man. That thing is slow. I was behind everybody all weekend, man. And as much as I like it, I mean, I like all the storage options on it and the fact that I can put all my stuff in my hatch right in front of me and have access to everything without having to carry a crate and everything. But it is definitely a lot slower than everybody else, man. That's for damn sure.
Is it your first boat?
Yeah.
I was just wondering, how long have you been in it?
A little over a year.
I think I've probably used in 20 years, starting with, like, Scupper Classics and Scramblers. The Scrambler XT, actually, and I that didn't come out, I think, till later. But I've probably used 5 or 6. And if it wouldn't have been for the circumstances, I probably never would have left the first kayak I was ever in.
Oh, I like it, man. It has a lot of great options, but... You know, it was just, you know, speed-wise, it's definitely not a speedy kayak at all. But it's dry, you know, it's fairly dry, and, you know, it's very stable, you know. I mean, so on that end of it, it's really, you know, good. But when you go out with a group of kayak anglers that a couple other people had Malibus, but... it was, you know, definitely I was way behind everybody else all weekend, you know, going up and, you know, paddling across flats and stuff like that. But I really liked, that was really my first real close-up look at natives and stuff. And I think those are pretty nice, you know.
Mark, you fixing a head out, buddy?
No, I was saying later to Sunjammer.
Oh, okay. Like, you're leaving too, man? What's going on? Okay. All right.
Well, I got to tell you something. I don't mean to interrupt you guys.
No. Go ahead, Spike.
No, I was just going to say about those native kayaks. I've had a lot of those boats come through our rotation, and I got to tell you, for skinny water fishing, I'd have more than one. There are some really good models for all kinds of different things.
Dee's got about 100 of them, right, Dee?
She's probably pro staff with them or something. But
she is, actually. She's the first female.
Hey, you know, I was going to make all kinds of sex, or it would have been my nature to make all kinds of subtly sexist cracks about kids and women fishing. But, Dee, I've known her for a long time, and she's in a whole different league. She's just good, you guys. You got to accept it. If it wasn't her, it would be just another, you know. I mean, the experience with me, if I go on a party boat or a head boat, if there's a woman or a kid on board, they're probably going to outfish most everybody. That and going on hundreds of trips, I mean, that's often been the experience. And I don't mean to be a pig about it or anything, but that's the fact. And it's funny that, you know, what happened this time, Dee was the best angler, well, one of the best anglers, and the kid didn't do so bad, huh?
No, and Dee's...
I hope I didn't insult anybody.
Did he insult you, Dee? I'll bump him off.
No, I'm just sucking it all in, baby.
I
want
to
get one of those T-shirts that I learned to fish.
Yeah, learn to fish like a girl.
Yeah.
Hey, I gave Dee
it'll
a good
go with the umbrella
on,
in my drink.
I gave Dee a good compliment on Yeti's Facebook page. They were asking who's the best guide for large sea trout, and I gave Dee a shout out there for that. So
nice.
Yeah, that was awesome. Thank you, Chuck.
Well, there ain't no doubt about it. You know what? Listen, man, I work at a tackle store, you know, probably one of the nicer tackle stores in our area, and we have a very large clientele of guides, inshore and offshore combined, and I've said it, I think, every episode probably on this radio station. I think I've said it. He is probably, without a doubt, the best trout fisherman that I've seen, man or woman, period. And you know what? Catching a big trout, to me, is 10 times harder than catching a redfish or catching a flounder or catching a snook. Because those big trout don't get big because they're stupid. And that, to me, is an art. If you can figure out how to get those big old breeder fish to bite, that's impressive. And you know what? That's why I have the respect for Dee that I do, because I can't do it. You know, I've got 21 years of experience fishing my lagoon and the north end of the river, the south end of the river, and fishing up and down my coast here. And I've never been able to put up big fish like that, not trout. You know, I've never been able to catch big trout like that. And that says a lot, you know. Yeah. I think she should copyright the fish like your girl thing and make that a T-shirt or a clothing line.
I think Chuck's already got that going, or Chip, sorry.
Yeah, I'm working on that one, Dee, so... But, you know, Charlie has said it a couple of times now. He wants to fish with you, so you need to hook. Charlie's going to have to hook up with you there. So
I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Was that Charlie who works at the tackle shop?
No, Charlie from Irish Water Dogs.
Oh, who works at the tackle shop?
That's Chuck. Redfish Chuck.
Oh, okay. You guys, I got impressed. You don't know how lucky you are. You know, you... Working in the store, a clientele of guides coming in and out. You see boats on the road all the time. On the west coast of the United States, it's down to a skeleton, the recreational fishing. You know, you hardly see it. Whole communities have just disappeared because they either can't fish or the fish went away. And 10 years later, California leads the world in building sustainable fisheries. Lots of our stocks have come back. People are fishing. We still sell tens of thousands of fishing licenses, but it isn't the economy and the recreation that it used to be. And it's just so insanely refreshing to me to hear you guys living in areas where I saw it when I visited Raleigh and went to North Carolina. You know, there isn't you get near a river, there isn't a convenience store there that doesn't have a giant tackle store in it. So
well,
it's nice to hear, and I love doing this show. Thanks for having me on.
Chuck, yeah, they're asking the name of your tackle shop there, Chuck. In the
it's Handler Fishing Supply, H-A-N-D-L-E-R, Handler Fishing Supply. Let me tell you something real quick. We're getting inundated with closures as you guys did on the West Coast, and it's not good. You know, we've definitely seen a decline in business. The thing that keeps us going strong is we're about 160 nautical miles to the Bahamas. So we've got quite a large clientele that makes that trip over to the Bahamas on a weekly basis, if not sometimes even a daily basis. So, you know, that kind of it's hard not to make it when you're selling Tiagras that cost, you know, $500, $600, $700, and you're selling four or five cases of Ballyhoo at a whack. So for that, it's been good. But my normal weekend warrior traffic has definitely been down. They're shutting us down for a lot of things here. And I'm not going to get into that because that's not what this show's about. But, you know, it's been tough. But you know what, man? It's funny because Adam, who's never usually around, it seems, Adam says it best. He's like, "You're living the dream." I'm like, "I guess." You know?
No, we hear it all the time.
Yeah,
I'm sure everybody hears that all the time.
You know, I love what I do. I love selling fish and tackle. I love dealing with customers. I love talking to people. I love promoting the sport that we all love, kayaking. I think that, you know, it's the next generation is going to be, you know, we'll see more and more kayakers out there on the water, which is fine with me. So the only thing that, you know, kind of concerns me is how far these legislations going to go. And again, we're not going to get into it. But I do have a funny story to tell you guys. Believe it or not, my buddy was out cobia fishing on his center console the other day, and I'm planning on going out and trying to get some cobia for points for our kayak wars here in the next couple weeks. My buddy was out cobia fishing, and he stopped cobia fishing because about a 17-foot white shark started swimming around his boat. Now, it's not strange for that to happen in California, you know, because they're
over
there.
Where was this?
Right here off of Port Canaveral, Florida, in about 60 foot water. About a 17-foot white shark comes swimming up to his boat, swam around his boat two or three times. They took some video and some pictures of it, and it swam off.
Oh, I got to see it. I love that stuff.
then there's a guy down south of us out of Jupiter who was down spearfishing, shot a big amberjack. Sent it up on a life buoy, and it got mauled by a white shark, a smaller one, about a 14-footer. And the guys on the boat were actually playing tug-of-war with the shark, trying to get the amberjack back. So it's kind of strange this time of year for us to see white sharks. Every now and again, you hear one cruising through, and what most people will mistakenly identify a mako shark for a white shark, but these were true white sharks, so it's kind of crazy.
Well, that's certainly a dang, man. White sharks in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, kind of makes you second guess whether or not you want to take the kayak off the beach and go catch cobias, you know?
No, it doesn't. I wouldn't have any second thoughts about it. I mean, you know, if it's your day to get eaten by a shark, then go down punching him in the nose, man. But go fishing.
Yeah, I guess.
How many white sharks have you had swim around your boat there, Spike?
You know, I got to tell you, I don't want this to be too self-serving, but I can't help it. When I moved up here near Bodega Bay, and that's pretty much my home port, and realized I was going to be in the water 100, 150 days a year, this is one of the sharkiest spots on the planet. But not today. You've got one of the sharkiest spots on the planet today. I got involved with a product called Shark Shield. And it was developed by the South African government. They sold the license to an Australian company to make a consumer product. And if you remember the old Star Trek show, they had those phasers or tasers, their little guns, and it would, like, just stun them, Scotty. Or this thing creates a force field, and it's just like a paddle leash hanging in the water. The computer and the power unit is about the size of a deck of cards, and divers use it for swimming. It was originally a commercial device to protect people working in the water, but they made a recreational unit out of it. And I got to tell you, I don't think about sharks anymore. I've had the white shark up to me in Mexico. I've had brown sharks, blue sharks, hammerhead sharks, and I've pretty much brought most of them to my boat. Not the white shark, it just showed up. And I've got a lot of friends who've had experiences with it. The guys in Hawaii get harassed terribly by tiger sharks. I got a call from a buddy one day, said, man, every other day they're chasing us back to the beach. And these are big adult tiger sharks. And we started using Shark Shield about 3 or 4 years ago, and I got to tell you, I don't care about blooding up the water anymore. I used to preach total blood containment, which as a writer I still preach. But I have Shark Shield on my boat all the time, and as long as that little green light is on, I would actually have the confidence if somebody was getting harassed by a big shark to paddle right up to it with this thing, as long as the shark's nose was in the water. Maybe next week. I don't want to chew this all up. I let somebody else get a word in. I'll tell you all about this thing and the technology. And they've got the info at the website, sharkshield.com. Thanks for the plug.
No, I'd like to hear that
shameless
story.
You are.
Tell us about it next week.
No problem.
Yeah, I was down in San Diego when that guy got that marathon swimmer triathlete got a South African sealed by a great white.
That's what. Oh man, I'm telling my hair's standing up right now. He was training.
Yeah, I was just about a mile down the beach and had just come off the water when we saw the lifeguard and, you know, the ambulance and everyone driving on the beach in La Jolla.
They swam out of Pendleton, didn't they?
No, he swam out of
La Jolla?
Just north of Black's Beach there.
Yeah, okay. Where were you stationed at Pendleton?
Yeah.
I love California.
And, I mean, the worst part was is that, you know, we were hauling big yellowtail, you know, about an hour before then. Before it happened, you know, with you know, big teddy irons and everything else, and then it just shut off. So we're sitting there thinking, okay, maybe, you know, some seals moved in or whatever, paddling in the shoreline, and as we're pulling the kayaks up, these boats, you know, the lifeguards start flying by, and so we're like, that's weird. Maybe someone's drowning, you know, caught in a rip current, whatever. Got, you know, load the kayaks up, got back home, turn on the TV. Marathon swimmer was eaten just a mile north of blah, 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 and I'm just like, you know. Because, you know, at any moment, that could have been us, which is kind of wild.
It makes you think.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I used to be one of those crazy guys down in La Jolla and Imperial Beach and Point Loma, you know, hauling in 12-foot, 8-foot thresher sharks onto my kayak and, you know, thinking about it. And, well, they get really small mouths. Great White has a really, really big mouth. I'm screwed.
Dee will find out soon enough that one of her trips up there to the lagoon, I'm sure she'll have a run-in with a nasty bull shark. There's quite a few of them that are in the lagoon, and there are some very large ones that tend to move through the lagoon because there's a lot of juvenile sea turtles that make their life in the lagoon there. And everyone thinks the only thing that can eat a sea turtle is a tiger shark. I'll tell you what, a pissed-off bull shark will eat one just as quick.
I think bull sharks cause more injury in the United States than any other species.
Oh, they're nasty. And you know what's funny is I was watching a program on ESPN one time. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It was Discovery Channel. And these guys were trying to tag a bull shark down in the Keys, and they tagged it, and they left it alone, and they, like, motored away from it in a little John Boat thing. The shark, they showed it. It literally chased the John Boat down and started biting the back end of the John Boat. Now, I catch bull sharks all the time offshore, and I'll tell you what, man, that is the nastiest animal, in my opinion, on the face of the planet. They don't get their name bull shark for no reason.
Yeah.
And again, I got a buddy of mine that I work with at the tackle shop, and you guys should check out his video on yakangler.com. I posted it. I talked about it a couple times. This crazy bastard actually shoots cobias, spearfishes cobias off of bull sharks. In the water by himself, no tank, no nothing. He's a free diver, and it's just one of those things. He just does it, you know. And you want to get your heart pumping. You watch a 9-foot bull shark come swimming right at you because you're chumming the water with a fresh bonita or whatever, and shooting cobias off the bull shark. It's kind of crazy.
That's fanatical.
Yeah.
You see, you'd know if it would be me because you'd see the big brown stain coming from where I was. To where I'm going to be.
Actually, you know what, man? They're actually really cool videos. You guys should, do me a favor and check them out. They're on Vimeo. They're on Vimeo. If you type in Josh Ball, like B-A-L-L, Cobia, they'll pop a bunch of different videos. And he's got some really cool stuff that he's done with those GoPro cameras. And I use a GoPro camera in the kayak quite a bit. So another shameless plug for me. Yay.
All right, we're gonna do a. What do you got planning for the summer as far as like a mother boat trip or mothership trip there, Chuck?
Oh, I'm definitely going to the east side of the Gulf Stream this year. I've been wanting to do that for a number of years now, and haven't found the right people to go with because, you know, that's kind of one of those things that when you decide to do that, that's the adventure for the entire day is to see if this crazy nut in the kayak can catch a 80-pound yellowfin or something like that. So I've got some friends that are customers of mine out there at the shop. They actually live in England, but they holiday, as they call it, here in the States. They've got a house nearby the port, and they've got a 36-foot yellowfin with triple 275 mercs on it. And they've agreed to let me throw my kayak in there and take it offshore. And they're actually kayak fishermen, and they actually own Native Ultimates. So I think he's going to hire a little bit more of a sit on top and join me out there this year. But I have to do that trip. Like, that's killing me not to do it. So that's what I'm going to do. That's my big trip for the year.
Yeah. I think you must have moved into a different room or something, Chuck, because I'm losing your signal there. Dee, you got a mothership trip available for your area?
Yeah, I'm going to tag along with Chuck.
You're going to tag along with Chuck?
Yeah,
cool.
That sounds great.
Got to get those offshore species, man. That's where the points are.
Well, you caught me off guard there a little bit there. But, yeah, I was planning on doing some stuff like that, but unfortunately, like, the Ultimates are not built for offshore unless you get a good day. So plans are in the works for buying some nice sit-on-top kayaks and doing that. And I've got, as you all know, I've been working with some guides to be able to go out there, you know, boat guides. So and Chuck's got some great, you know, opportunities as well. So maybe something can work out with that too.
Cool.
Yeah, I plan on trying to get Dee out there with me at some point offshore, trying to get her on some of those pelagic fish. I think, you know what, watching her get all excited about catching a big trout or catching a big redfish, you know, I can't imagine seeing her face if she hooks a 40-pound dolphin fish out of a kayak or, you know, a pissed-off 35 or 40-pound cobia. Nothing too big, but, you know, something manageable. Yeah, she probably,
I'm there.
Probably
I'm there.
Like a sailor.
She cusses like a sailor as it is.
Well, it'd be even worse. It'd be that times like 100.
Yeah, because I think part of the strategy that we're going to have to – we got to get some more species on our list because some the teams that are ahead of us are have a lot of different species, you know. I don't know where we're going to find
them. They really haven't caught more fish than us. They've just caught – the pelagic species, the blackfin tunas, are giving them a bunch of points, you know?
50 points a pop for a football, yeah.
There you go. It takes
and
up five redfish to make that 50 points.
Irish water dogs is catching up, too.
I saw that, man.
Well, I'm fishing Tuesday, and I've got a pretty good idea where there's some nice fish, and hopefully I can work with Dee if she's been going up there at all, and you know, I didn't get a report from Dee the day after we were there or the 2 days after we were there that Tuesday. But I'm sure that area is still going to hold some fish. And me and Aaron, I think, had a good idea about sneaking it behind that island where we were parked in front of. And
yeah, that's where I was.
We never really got a chance to do it because you can't leave fish to find fish.
I'll
give you a quick rundown. West winds at 15 miles an hour bumped those fish into different schools. So there were multiple schools that were traveling. So you had a whole mile all the way down on that island to try to find them. So we landed a bunch of rat reds with a lot of traveling. And then several flounder came up. I actually hooked up a good one, but my hook came undone from my leader, which I was really pissed about. Those eyelets, you know, were real loose, and I'm like pulling in my leader going, wait, nothing bit it. So I lost a really good flounder. Anyway, going back around the island, there were a couple 30-inch reds in there, down to a couple of rats. And my client caught a nice 27-inch trout, nice 27-inch red. Everybody's happy. It was actually a really, really nice spot. But that was just within a 16th of a mile spot. These big fish were sitting in there hiding from the wind. Great day on the water. Great day. Can I add something really, really funky?
Okay, get funky with this.
Does everybody have time? Okay.
Sure.
The wind is gusting 20, 25 miles an hour from the west. We have to, or from the west, so we're heading west. We're paddling back. The dude loses a blade. My paddle's broke. My guy's paddling back with one paddle, right? Blade's broken, so he's now doing canoe style. The other blade breaks off. I now have to tow him. Yeah! I freaking am pissed about this. I wanted to tell people about this because I was so upset the situation. He ends up paddling. It's a mile and a half paddle back. I'm sorry, I don't want to over-exaggerate. And we weren't, like, push-pulling or doing anything with these paddle blades. There was no stress on them on these paddles. The blade breaks off. We've got about a mile left to go. We're crossing over the deeper part of the lagoon, Chuck, right?
Right.
From
right.
One flat to the next flat. We're paddling. He's canoe paddling. The other blade breaks. The guy's got nothing. I end up having to tow him back.
Was that the fish stick, D?
Those were Accent paddles, brand new.
Oh,
funny you say that. I got a buddy of mine that's got an Accent paddle that's broken, too. He just broke it. And he was only paddling. So what you need to do, honestly, is you need to get with Accent, send them out an email and let them know, look, this is what happened. And because he did the same thing,
well,
they sent him two brand new paddles.
Well, I got the paddles replaced from my guy where I got them from, so that's not a problem. But, I mean, when you think about it, why would you want them replaced if they've already broke? And ironically, I have two paddles, and one broke the week before I took my client out. So that one was sitting on the side. And I went, oh, my God, what if this one does it? And both blades break off. I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't believe it. And I bought them at two totally different times. So you know the molding had to have not been in the same, you know, same run. Oh, my God. Can you imagine if you were whitewatering or you were out in the ocean or whatever? You've got nothing.
What's that thing about up a creek and no paddle or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not good. Well, that's
yeah.
A serious
so
issue.
I warn
now.
Everybody, you know. So I got these two paddles that are brand new. Anybody want to buy them?
Hello, eBay.
See what I'm saying?
I'm good. I just bought a brand new paddle for the new yak, so I'm good, dude. Thank you.
Okay, great.
You know,
but
I might want to put that paddle in a vise and try to rip the blade off and see if it fails.
Yeah.
And actually just take some two-part epoxy. The plastic welder is one of my faves. And re-adhere it if it breaks off, and that is never coming off.
Well,
crazy stuff.
A,
that's the first. I've never heard of that one happening.
Yeah. Well, I definitely
guiding,
don't have any. What?
Good guiding. Damn good guiding.
Yeah. Towing them in 20-mile-an-hour winds. Yeah,
oh, man. Man.
God.
You said the wind was blowing 20, 25 knots. I thought you were going to say we were at a park bench having a beer.
Oh, my God.
And if you've never
there
seen
was not
DC,
even
like
time to crack a beer. So yeah, everybody, you know, be really careful of that brand. I'm not confident in them at all. And I looked at the different styles that they had, the different models in the showroom before I had them exchanged. And they're all done the same way. They've got a little bit of a tubing in the middle that holds the actual handle and then the blade together, and then their shrink, hot, what do you call those, shrink, not shrink wrapped, you know, and held on that way with glue too, and that's just not enough of a, you know, I'm...
Yeah, they're heat shrinked. It's garbage.
The heat shrink, yeah.
That's why I like my 70s paddle. The only thing I have to worry about is it rusting in half.
That paddle that you have there, Rob, you could hit a shark over the head and kill it with that thing. It's so heavy, man.
That's why I have it, man.
Yeah,
you,
but you know, if you're paddling like we paddle, you know, 7 mile paddle, 5 mile paddle one way, 5 mile back, you're happy of a light paddle. But to have that happen on a light paddle is ridiculous. You know, they sell that thing retail for $170. I was like, what the? Are you kidding me?
The fiberglass shaft?
Yeah.
It's a fiberglass shaft on there?
Yes.
Huh. Unbelievable. Made in America?
Made in America.
Probably not. Probably assembled in America, made in China.
Well, yeah, that might be it. But anyway, it's just... Be really careful out there, you know. I don't even know how to, I don't know what to say. I almost feel like I should be keeping an extra paddle, but what kind of confidence is that, right?
Did you hand the guy that little single-bladed, you know, backwater paddle thing and say, here you go, bud?
No, it was
just
by the time she got to shore.
No, the guy's poor guy is, like, doing the double paddle handle, the double-handed paddle on the side of the kayak. So both paddles, both blades are gone, right? He puts the shaft in the kayak, and he's got both hands out on the side of the kayak, and he's trying to paddle. I'm like, what are you doing? Let me tow you in.
He needed the mud closer.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's where you need the trolling motor, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know, some of that skinny water there, you tear up the grass. I like...
I'm just saying, you know, that would have helped, but I don't...
It would have helped, yeah, when you're towing him back, that would have helped great.
When you were towing that dude back, were you standing up and paddling? Because I don't think you sat down, like, the whole time on Sunday.
Yeah.
No, we're trying to head west. The wind's coming out of the west. I would have gone backwards. No.
Oh yeah, and that was the total day cap for our trip on Sunday with Dee and Chuck. Is that? I mean, so you go fishing like that, and you probably, if I was on a guided trip, it'd have been worth about $150 tip. To have that wind blowing us back to the boat ramp, to where all you had to do
was
sleep, and it dropped you off at the boat ramp. I mean,
that's what I did.
That's what it did,
Me and Dee talked to God that morning and told him, listen, buddy, this is the situation. We're going to put these guys through hell today, and that you need to give us an east wind on the way home.
See, all this talk about how difficult it is to catch redfish, I didn't find it very difficult at all.
Yeah,
it was
they were grabbing it.
That's why Chuck and I have a job.
Yeah, exactly. Good call, D.
No, it was literally, man, sometimes you'd cast, you know, and it wouldn't even hit the floor, or it didn't even hit the water before there was a fish grabbing it, man. They were like practically coming out of the water to get it, almost like
I got my first one on the fly, dude. Guess how thick they were.
That's right.
That
we forgot to mention that. Chuck got the fly rod monkey off his back. He's now he has the redfish on the fly badge. So
right on.
That's awesome, man. But my arms were too tired. I brought out my buggy whip and I cast it a few times, and I just couldn't keep it out of the water. So it was like, all right, I'm going back to tossing it. The clone actually, he said, he said he caught a fish that had three hook marks in its mouth. He's like, this thing keeps eating our bait.
Man, I don't ever remember having to stop fishing because my hands hurt from reeling them in. I mean, I feel like my hand is permanently, you know, in that grip, the fishing pole, you know, that just in that position like the rest of my life.
did D and I give you carpal tunnel for the rest of your life?
That's right. Yeah.
my poor hand, all I can do now is like hold a fishing pole, you know.
Or your paddle.
Yeah, that too, you know, you just kind of cram it in there like a G.I. Joe.
All right.
I got to run to the Petaluma Airport, you guys. I'm going to sign off. Thanks for having me on and sharing with me.
Oh,
hey.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Spike.
Hey, hopefully we'll talk to you next week.
All right,
good
buddy. Bye, lines.
Have a good one.
That guy's awesome.
He's a trip,
man.
He's your typical Cali, you know, fisherman, man. He's like a California, he's hanging out on the beach, man. I could have swore I hadn't heard from him in like 2 months, so I was quite sure that he was in Tahiti or somewhere paddling around looking for fish. So, but anyways, we've been going for about an hour and 15 here. It's time to get some beauty sleep. Otherwise, my face would get too ugly for radio, so... We've had a great time, and I'm sure Rob is going to talk about it some more. In fact, the late show tonight, Rob, what do you got coming up?
Well, I got Rick Underbrink, one of the founders of Kayak Wars, coming on the first part of the show, and we're going to talk to him, ask him some questions that people have been asking about Kayak Wars, and then I'm sure Chuck and the landing crew will come in, and we'll probably talk about, you know, the lagoon and what we got to do to get back there.
Definitely got to get back to the lagoon.
Just drive.
You guys are welcome anytime. Me and Dee, I'm sure,
yeah,
would never mind. If
we'll get
you guys
out there. Yeah.
Give us a heads up.
And Charlie is... I've been counting here. I think we're up to about 15 or 20 times now that he said he wants to fish with D. So, D, you have to take care of Charlie when he comes down that way.
Absolutely.
You know, make sure that you're ready to fish, D, Charlie, because D doesn't mess around, man.
Yeah.
It's you better be ready to fish.
Fish and you got. I think maybe we insulted D because we didn't drink any beer with her. So we have to go. We
no,
have to go.
No, that wasn't it.
We have
the
to go back.
The last trip, Chuck knows, the last trip we had gone out, and, like, nobody brought beer. I was like, what the hell, you know, because I love, you know, my beer after fishing. So I offered everybody, and they're all thrilled with the beer, right? And then this time I'm like, okay, I'm going to bring a case of beer. And nobody else brought beer. But I was just, like, passing it around to everybody, you know. It was great. I thought it was great. I don't know. It was funny.
It was too fun, man.
I gave you a frothy beverage in the middle of the barge canal.
Yes. See? Look at how that works.
All right.
See, we got to introduce you to the Sweetwater Brewing Company, man, because that was Chip brought a couple of those camping. And... let me tell you, that's a quality adult beverage right there, man.
It's a local brewery up here in Atlanta.
Man, that was some good stuff.
You get sponsored by a beer company. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, there we go. I'm gonna send them a letter and see if they'll sponsor us. I'm not going to get sponsored.
You know what? I'll tell you, Miller won't sponsor me even if I drink a case a day, you know?
You've been trying that?
Yeah, I do know.
All right. All right, folks. We're going to continue, I'm sure, at 11 o'clock tonight. That'll be 8 o'clock West Pacific time. And Rob will be smoking it out up there on the late show. We had a great time with Chuck, D, Charlie, the guys from Mitchell and Scott. Scott and all those guys. We really appreciate the trip. We will do it again. I'm actually thinking spring break, so that's the first week in April. I need a campground somewhere near the Goon or somewhere far enough from the Goon that I don't have to fight too many mosquitoes, but I won't forget my thermocell this time. Thank everybody for the trip, and the clone is still having sweet fishing dreams about that trip, so appreciate it. And everybody on the chat room, good night. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Chuck. Mark, if you're still there. And,
good night, everybody.
We'll see you next
week. Good night, everybody. Join us tonight.
Good night, Chuck.
Good night.